I'm going to read you four descriptions of the world, and please feel free to add up the number that you agree with. It can be zero, of course. So, description one, the world's in awful shape. There's untold suffering among billions of people and animals. That's number one. Number two, the world's much better off than three centuries ago. We're healthier and wealthier than ever. Number three, the world can be a wildly better place. Just look at how much money and talent we're still wasting. And number four, the world's never been closer to its own demise. So just in case anybody was counting, has anybody got zero there? Anybody got one? You don't have to show in case you're a bit bothered about what everybody else has done. Anybody got two? We've got a two. Anybody got three? Anybody got four? And the abstentions win, which is good. You know, it's a simplistic thing. Again, this is from Rutger's book. I read all of those and go, I can agree with all of those. I might have kind of debates over the words, you know. I'm a Unitarian after all, so we've got to have a debate about the words, haven't we? But understanding where we're at and understanding our moral ambition, I've attempted to show so far that having that highest ambition is, of course, important, but the challenges of understanding what that ambition is and that the morality around it. So a couple of examples. You'll have maybe have heard of Olodé Aquano, who was an abolitionist who lived in England and was a middle class and a black person and supposedly owned African slaves. He was friends with a Quaker called Clarkson, and Clarkson was discovered by the Quakers, who were looking for somebody to help them in the abolition of slavery argument. And Clarkson had written, I think, the equivalent of a PhD about the slave trade and was putting out publicity about the number of slaves that were killed in the transfer across to America. But it was only when Clarkson changed the narrative of the media and talked about the number of sailors who died, not the number of slaves, that people started listening. And there is a really unpleasant fact, and this is no defense of anything, but I'm just stating it as a fact, that actually the percentage of sailors who died in the slave trade, percentage, not numbers, I hasten to add, was actually considerably higher, because the people who ran the ships had no incentive to keep the sailors alive, because there was nothing to sell at the end. Rutger in his book has this great set of illusions for us to contend with. You'll be glad to know I'm not going to do them all, but I am going to just offer you one or two little snippets. The illusion of good intentions. Another question for you. This is from Analysis Round the World. Between 1998 and 2022, an analysis of 1,557 climate policies. That's 1,557. How many of them made a significant reduction in carbon dioxide? Anybody care to give me a number of 15? Sorry? None. That's a good offer.
Four.
Well, we're getting the right idea. 63. I haven't examined whether that's an accurate reflection of the strength or not. And another one. In 2019, 40 to 70% of the donated medical devices were unused as either not functional or not appropriate or didn't have the correct training. I'd like to tell a story from my experience now. Over in the UK last summer, we had a series of demonstrations at asylum hotels. So it was over a couple of weekends, and I know similar things have happened here in Ireland. There was quite an unpleasant series of demonstrations, some of them violent. And I lived in a little town called Evesham at the time, and we had a little demonstration. Evesham wasn't a big town, so it was never going to be too big an event, but there was one. And so I went, and I arrived about half an hour after the due start time. And next to the hotel was about 30 or 40 of largely an unpleasant set of individuals, and on the other side, on the pavement, was about the same number of what I would loosely call my lot, so the progressive lot. And so I went over and said hello. There was a sign on each lamppost on our side which said, "All refugees welcome." I don't know whether you use that phrase over here in Ireland or not. I should have asked that question, but in the UK that gets used a lot. So they're there on the lamppost. And one of the people I knew well gave me a hug. "Lovely to see you, Mark. Great to have you with us on this side of the road." And I said, "Well, if I'm honest, I don't think I'm quite on this side of the road. I think I might be 2 or 3 feet into the road." And they said, "Well, what do you mean?" I said, "Well, can you tell me what that sign means, 'All refugees welcome'?" So we then started having a discussion. And I said, "For me, the only interest I've got in that sign, 'All refugees welcome,' is what does that sign mean to all those people on the other side of the road? Because to me, what that sign means is we want to welcome every refugee in the world into our country. That's what that sign says." And they all said, "No, it didn't. It doesn't mean that at all." So, well, it might not mean that to you, but I'm pretty certain it'll mean that to them. And so we had a bit of a debate, and then this person I knew's daughter was there, and we had quite a session. And I looked across the road. I've been in Evesham 7 years, and I knew almost as many people on the other side of the road as I did on my side of the road. And so it all got a bit yucky. There was no violence, but there was lots of language, there was lots of unpleasantness, there was lots of social media abuse occurring at the same time about various people. Nothing wild, but yeah, is what I would describe it as. And the particularly unpleasant mouthpiece of the other side of the road wanders across, you know, I won't repeat the words. And so I stepped out into the road and shouted at him in the way that they could all hear, "That sign there, what does that mean to you?" I won't give you his response, obviously, but it was fairly explicit. And I shouted across to him and tried to get him to shut up, but couldn't really succeed. But I shouted and said, "There is not one person on that side of the road who thinks that we should welcome every refugee in the world. What they're saying, or at least I think they're saying, is that when they're here, we want to welcome every refugee, and we want to try and welcome as many refugees as we can." That's a very different statement. And the two people who were with him kind of mumbled and walked off. And this guy looked at me, put out his hand, and said, "Oh, you're all right, you, aren't you?" and walked off. Now, I'm not saying that that particular interaction says anything magnificent about what may get changed, but it moved me, and it moved my little congregation in Evesham. And they have now got some funding to run what they're calling an agreeable disagreement day in Evesham to try and bring these two sides together. Not the horrible mouthpiece, and equally not those of us on our side who are totally definitive that we should try and welcome everybody, but the vast majority in the middle. It's a very small thing, but it's a little piece of glowworm, isn't it? It's a little attempt to do something. The section that I want to finish off from the book, there is a chapter entitled, "Make It Your Moral Ambition to Win." Make it your moral ambition to win. And I've got a big long list of things that he assaults us general progressive people, if we are all that in this church, and I'm kind of thinking we're close to it. And I'm not going to list them out, but he gives us some stick, and quite often with some justification, by saying, if you actually stick to your guns of wanting to get X, then you might end up with a very horrible Y. And I think he's got a point. I can leave you to think about what that may mean for you, for something that's important for you. because we do have to make decisions, and I'm so glad that I'm not the leader of a government. We do have to make decisions that are really hard to make about protecting people, about supporting people. And all that's in the background of a set of people, which is all of us, who make making those decisions quite tricky. And I've used it as the title today and told some of those difficult stories from the book to remind us that even great people of the past weren't all great. They did fantastic things, but they also had things that we would certainly view as not fantastic. And the idea of the glowworm is to remind us that it's wonderful if we can shine our light on something where we can. And that doesn't mean that we all have to run out of these doors and start dancing around Dublin and changing the world, although feel free to do that. But I'd like to just take you back to the opening quotation to finish from Tyler Cowen. And I didn't say this, he's actually an economist. Apologies for having an economist in a spiritual gathering. I can't help myself sometimes. Lower your threshold for taking action. At critical moments in time, you can raise the aspirations of other people significantly, especially when they are relatively young, simply by suggesting they do something better or more ambitious than what they might have in mind. It costs you relatively little to do this, but the benefit to them and to the broader world may be enormous. This is, in fact, one of the most valuable things you can do with your time and with your life. And I do think Unitarianism, with the power of its openness, our willingness to look for the next thing we can do as the right thing, I think we've got a strong chance to lower our threshold for taking action, and in so doing have a greater influence than we may otherwise do. Amen.